Have you ever looked around and realized no one is coming to push you, praise you, or pick you up, and felt that dull ache in your chest that says, maybe I don't matter enough? That moment can break you, or it can build you. The world teaches you to wait for support before you move, for validation before you try, for a team before you begin. But there's a quieter, older lesson life keeps whispering. Your progress can't be hostage to other people's attention. If applause is your oxygen, you'll suffocate in most rooms. If approval is your permission slip, you'll never leave the house. Today is about learning how to advance alone, how to build momentum in the silence, make decisions without an audience, and turn lonely hours into the strongest hours of your life. Not because solitude is glamorous, but because it is honest. When the noise fades, you meet the person who actually decides your future. You. 1. Loneliness. The silent teacher of strength. Loneliness is a strange companion. It walks in uninvited and sits beside you on ordinary days, the end of a long shift, the walk home at dusk, the moment you put your phone down and there's no one texting back. Our first instinct is to run from it. Fill the space with scrolling, noise, company that doesn't really see us, projects that keep us too busy to feel. But loneliness isn't just a void, it's a signal. It's the body and mind telling you there is a gap between the life you're living and the connection you crave. And here's the hard truth. No one can close that gap for you. They can meet you in it, yes, but they cannot carry you across. That crossing is yours. What if you stopped treating loneliness as an enemy and started treating it as a teacher? Teachers give assignments. Loneliness assigns you the task of building inner ballast, weight that keeps you steady when no hand is holding yours. It asks you to find ways to self-regulate your nervous system without outsourcing calm to someone else's voice. It asks you to befriend your own thoughts long enough to notice which ones are lies. I'm not enough unless someone says I am. And which ones are direction? This matters to me, even if no one claps. When you do this work, you stop being pulled around by the social weather. You still want company. You're human, but you no longer need constant company to function. That shift is strength. Start by making the silence usable. Most people sit in quiet and wrestle with their minds. You're going to give the quiet a job. Choose a daily appointment with yourself, 15 to 30 minutes, where you put the phone in another room and meet your life directly. No soundtrack, no multitasking, a chair, a notebook, and your breath. Ask 3 questions and write without trying to sound wise. What am I avoiding? What would move my life forward by 1 inch today? What am I grateful for that I keep skipping past? The first question names the dragon, the second hands you a sword, the third reminds you why it's worth fighting. This isn't journaling as performance, it's a private negotiation with your future. Then train your body to trust you in the absence of applause. Loneliness often spikes cortisol and makes you jittery. You reach for any distraction that promises a quick hit of connection. Instead, respond with ritual. 10 deep breaths, longer on the exhale. A fast walk to change your chemistry. A short, honest workout. Push-ups against the wall. Air squats. A plank you hold past the point your mind wants to quit. When you keep a promise to your body in the quiet, your nervous system learns a new association. Solitude equals safety, not danger. That one lesson will save you from 1,000 impulsive decisions made just to not be alone. Use the hours other people waste. Lonely evenings can be the forge where you build the skills that buy you freedom later. Pick one craft that matters to your path. Writing, design, coding, sales, cooking, a language, and decide to become uncommonly competent over the next 90 days. not public declarations, private reps, 30 to 60 minutes nightly, tracked on a simple calendar. X the days you showed up, no streak worship, just steady showing. The progress will be small and invisible at first, like a muscle under a sleeve. Then one day, an opportunity appears, and you're ready because you trained in the dark while everyone else was hunting dopamine. That preparedness feels like luck from the outside. It's not. It's lonely work turning into visible power. Loneliness will try to sell you two lies. Lie one. If no one is here, nothing you do matters. Counter it with evidence. Write down three ways your private effort has already paid off. Calmer mornings, clearer writing, stronger body, tighter boundaries. Lie two. You'll feel like this forever. Feelings talk in absolutes. Reality moves. Put a date on your calendar 30 days from now and promise yourself this. If I practice my nightly craft, keep my daily meeting with myself, and treat my body kindly, the texture of my loneliness will change. Then keep the promise. Pain respects discipline. It doesn't always leave, but it loses its authority. Be selective with your inputs. The lonelier you feel, the easier it is to wander into spaces that deepen the ache, highlight reels, doom feeds, rooms where everyone is performing connection instead of practicing it. Curate a small diet of voices that make you braver, not needier. Read a few pages of something that steadies you. Listen to someone who earned strength in seasons like yours. But don't binge. Inspiration without action becomes another escape hatch. Use it as a spark, then move your feet. Finally, remember that loneliness is often a sign you're outgrowing a previous version of your life. The old circle no longer fits. The old habits no longer satisfy. The old conversation no longer feeds you. That in-between place feels empty because it's a hallway. Doors behind you closing, doors ahead not yet open. Don't sprint back to familiar rooms just to avoid the echo. Keep walking. While you walk, build. Build skill. Build standards. Build a self-respect that doesn't need a crowd to stay upright. When new people arrive, and they will, you'll meet them differently. Not as a beggar for attention, but as a builder with something to share. That shift changes who sticks around. You can get ahead with no one there for you because you can be there for yourself in ways that actually move your life. Solitude becomes a studio, not a sentence. Silence becomes a tool, not a threat. And strength stops being a costume you wear and becomes the way you breathe. If this landed, tell me in comments. 2. Stop seeking emotional comfort from others. Learn self-soothing. You've spent years outsourcing calm, a text to be reassured, a call to be rescued, a scroll to feel less alone. It works, briefly. Then the silence returns, and with it, the same restless pulse. The truth is not cruel. It's clarifying. Emotional dependence is a beautiful instinct misapplied. You were meant to bond, yes, but not to hand your nervous system to the crowd. If your peace rises and falls with other people's replies, your life is a market with volatile swings. Stoicism offers a steadier economy. You become the lender of last resort for your own nervous system. Not because you don't need anyone, but because you refuse to need everyone for what you must build inside. Start by naming the mechanism. Distress spikes. You reach outward. You get a hit. Attention. Advice. You got this. Your body exhales, not because the problem changed, but because someone else carried your alarm for a minute. That habit trains you to doubt your own capacity. The next spike feels bigger, the reach gets faster, and suddenly you're negotiating your day with a panel of opinions. The Stoic reframe is simple and difficult. First soothe, then seek. You can still talk to trusted people after you've demonstrated to yourself that your baseline doesn't belong to them. Self-soothing is not pretending you're fine. It is regulating enough to think clearly. Think of it as a bridge between feeling and action. When the storm hits, your goal isn't to poetically suffer or to sprint for solutions. It's to bring your system back under friendly command. Begin with the most honest tool you own, your body. Emotions are physiological events before they become stories. So treat the body like a partner. Stand up, plant both feet, relax your jaw, and lengthen the exhale. Count 4 in through the nose, 6 out through the mouth, 10 rounds. Let your eyes find a fixed point at eye level, windows, horizon, a doorknob, and keep them there while you breathe. That little anchoring trick tells the ancient animal in you, we are safe enough to choose. Choice is the beginning of dignity. Once your pulse has lowered a notch, give the emotion a shape without making it your identity. Instead of, I am anxious, try, anxiety is present. Instead of, I'm broken, try, there is pain. That gram of linguistic distance is not cute philosophy. It's leverage. It places you in the role of witness instead of prisoner. From witness, you can ask cleaner questions. What is the sensation? What is the situation? What story am I adding? Write the answers in 3 blunt lines. You'll notice the story is the loudest and the least trustworthy. Good. Stories can be edited. Sensations can be soothed. Situations can be addressed. Now choose a ritual that returns you to yourself. For some, it's movement that paces the emotion out of the body. A brisk walk without the phone. A set of air squats. A minute long plank that reminds you you're strong when your mind whispers you're not. For others, it's stillness that lets truth settle. Hands on the ribs, eyes closed, 3 minutes of breath where the only job is to feel the body rise and fall. Or it's pen to page, uncensored, unpunctuated, until the static thins and you can see the one problem you're actually facing instead of the 10 your fear invented. Make the ritual small enough that you will do it while upset. Yoga for an hour is fantasy. 10 breaths, 1 lap around the block, 30 sentences messy in a notebook is a practice. Then upgrade your inner voice from critic to coach. Many of us learn to self-soothe with self-attack. Get it together, you're being ridiculous. As if cruelty could produce calm. It doesn't. It produces compliance and shame, which look like discipline until they collapse. Try a tone that is gentle and firm, the way you'd talk to someone you want to be stronger next month, not just obedient for 5 minutes. Say it out loud if you can. I can carry this surge. I don't need instant relief. I need a better move. I'm going to be kind to myself and hard on the problem. These sentences become rails your mind can grab when the floor feels slippery. Self-soothing also includes boundaries with the very tools you use to cope. If your first reflex is to open a chat, build a pause. No messaging for 15 minutes after a spike. If your reflex is to scroll, give yourself a time-boxed alternative. 5 push-ups, fill a glass of water, step outside and count 10 windows. You're not banning comfort, you're sequencing it. Regulate first, relate second. The order matters because it changes what you bring to the conversation. A regulated you asks for perspective. A dysregulated you asks to be rescued and resents the rescuer by nightfall. There is a deeper layer, the old wound, that keeps reaching. Maybe you were trained to earn comfort by performing distress, or punished for having needs, or praised for being the strong one who never needed anything. Reparenting yourself doesn't require excavating every memory. It requires giving yourself consistently what you should have received. Presence that doesn't panic, reassurance that doesn't lie, structure that doesn't shame. Set small non-negotiables that signal reliability to the parts of you that expect abandonment. A bedtime you keep within an hour, a morning ritual that begins before your phone, food that steadies instead of spikes, a weekly check-in where you ask, "What did I do this week that made me proud?" Stability is a love language your nervous system understands. You will still want people. Good. After you've calmed yourself, go to them with clearer asks. "I don't need fixing. I'd love 10 minutes of listening." Or, "Help me think through two options." Or, "I just want company while I do this hard thing." Notice how much less conflict you create when you make precise requests from a centered place. Notice, too, how your relationships deepen when you stop recruiting friends as emergency regulators and invite them as partners in growth. You become lighter to be around, not because you hide emotions, but because you carry the first half yourself. The payoff of self-soothing isn't just fewer meltdowns, it's traction. When your baseline doesn't depend on permission, you can work your plan through quiet weeks, keep promises when the crowd is busy elsewhere, and recover faster when you stumble. That reliability becomes identity. You begin to trust you. Others feel it and calibrate around it. And on the days when no one shows up, and there will be those days, you still move because your piece is now portable. Anchor this, if it helps, with a simple vow you can whisper at the next spike. "I regulate first, then I reach." 3. Stop complaining. The language of the victim ego. There's a soft addiction most people never diagnose because it feels like honesty, complaining. You tell yourself you're processing, venting, keeping it real. But look closely. Most complaining isn't a bridge to action. It's a loop that returns you to the same chair, a little more convinced that life happens to you and you are powerless to shape it. The victim ego loves this music. It keeps you safe from responsibility by insisting that responsibility wouldn't matter anyway. So you rehearse injustices, audition villains, and narrate your limitations until they harden into identity. You don't mean to. It's just easy. And in a world that rewards outrage with attention, complaining feels productive. It isn't. It's a thief that steals agency while pretending to be a friend. Ask yourself a blunt question. After a week of complaints, what changed, out there or in you? Usually nothing but your mood. The stoic posture isn't to deny pain or ignore unfairness. It's to refuse to make them your native tongue. Marcus wrote his frustrations privately and then asked, "What is within my power now?" That second line is the hinge. Complaining edits it out. It keeps you busy describing the weather instead of adjusting your sail. The more you narrate helplessness, the more your nervous system learns to conserve energy, to shrink effort, to seek sympathy in place of solutions. That trade might win you nods in the moment. It will cost you years. Begin by noticing your micro-complaints, the tiny sighs of resignation that leak through your day. "Traffic always ruins my mornings. My boss doesn't get it. Dating is pointless. The algorithm hates me." Each sentence contains a truth and a surrender. Traffic exists. It doesn't own your morning. Your boss may not get it. You still own preparation, clarity, and options. Dating can be messy. You still own standards, boundaries, and the courage to leave. Algorithms shift. You still own making something useful at a cadence you control. Complaints flatten complexity into fate. Agency reintroduces levers. Turn every complaint into a two-step drill. Convert, then commit. Convert the sentence from grievance to goal. I hate this commute becomes, I'll turn drive time into learning time with 2 daily audio lessons. My manager is unclear becomes, I'll send concise recaps and ask for confirmation in writing. No one notices my work becomes, I'll ship 1 visible deliverable weekly and document outcomes, then commit to the first small action within 15 minutes. Not a grand plan, 1 move that makes the world 1 inch different. If you don't act, you didn't convert. You just rebranded the complaint. You'll resist. But some things are unjust. Correct, some are. File formal complaints when they change outcomes. HR, ethics hotlines, legal channels. That's not the complaining we're talking about. That's using systems designed to correct harm. The problem is habitual lament about things no system can fix for you. Your discipline, your preparation, your boundaries, your focus, those are yours. And the longer you narrate them as someone else's fault, the longer you delay the only changes that will make your life lighter. Replace venting with value reporting. Once a day, write 3 lines: what I controlled, what improved, what I learned. Controlled: woke at 6:30 and wrote 300 words. Improved: templated my outreach email. Learned: shorter subject lines get more replies. Do this for 2 weeks and you'll feel your voice change from complaint to competence. It's subtle but profound. Your brain starts scanning for levers, not losses. That scan becomes a habit. Habits become identity. Language matters. Listen for absolutes and identities. Always, never. That's just who I am. Those are complaint keywords. Swap them for process verbs. I'm training. I'm practicing. I'm iterating. I'm bad at mornings is a life sentence. I'm training mornings is a plan. I always attract the wrong people is doom. I'm practicing clearer boundaries and standards is a path. Small grammatical tweaks sound trivial. They aren't. They tell your nervous system whether to invest or to retreat. Build a social boundary around negativity. Explain to 1 or 2 close people, I'm trying to complain less. If I start looping, ask me, what's your lever? Or what's your next move? Choose allies who won't shame you but won't let you sink either. And set an internal rule. 1 minute to describe, 2 minutes to plan. Use a timer if you have to. The timer is not policing, it's liberation. It rescues you from the quicksand of your own eloquence. There's an emotional undercurrent here. Many of us complain to be seen. We think if we describe our pain vividly enough, someone will finally understand and comfort us. That need is human. But complaining purchases connection at a discount. People nod, offer sympathy, and leave. What you wanted wasn't sympathy, it was change. So invert the order. Soothe first. Breathe, walk, write. Then seek real support with a clear ask. I don't need advice. Sit with me for 10 minutes. Or, I need help choosing between A and B. Poke holes in my thinking. Precise requests create useful conversations. Vague lament creates fatigue for you and for them. Use preemption. Identify your top 3 complaint triggers: fatigue, hunger, ambiguous instructions, certain people, and prepare if-then responses. If I'm underslept, then I will not make declarations about my life before 10 a.m. If the brief is vague, then I will ask 3 clarifying questions instead of assuming incompetence. If that colleague starts the same rant, then I will exit kindly after 2 minutes or redirect to a solution. You are not at the mercy of patterns you can anticipate, and when you do slip, and you will, recover quickly without drama. Catch yourself mid-rant and pivot out loud. Okay, I'm complaining. Here's my lever. Here's my next step. Make the correction visible to yourself and whoever's listening. It retrains your identity in real time. You are someone who notices and returns, not someone who spirals and stays. Why does this matter so much when you're getting ahead alone? Because complaining seduces the solo traveler with the illusion of company. It fills the air with words so you don't have to fill your life with work. But progress is allergic to passive noise. It responds to movement. The farther you walk down this path, the more you'll appreciate people who speak in verbs. Build, learn, ship, train, ask, refine, rest. Become one of them. Your days will change texture. Fewer post-mortems, more prototypes. Fewer epics about villains, more clean boundaries. Less why me, more watch me. You don't have to become silent about pain to stop complaining. You have to become precise about power. Keep a sentence on the tip of your tongue for the next time the victim ego reaches for the mic. I honor the feeling. And I choose the lever. Then pull it, however small. Nothing breaks the spell of complaint like evidence that you can still move. 4. Become your own source of validation. If applause is your oxygen, you'll suffocate anywhere without a crowd. That's the trap. Outsourcing your worth to likes, replies, nods in a meeting, a partner's mood, a parent's tone. External validation feels clean because it arrives fully formed. A number, a compliment, a promotion. But it is also unstable. Algorithms change, people get busy, praise has politics, and silence gets misread as disapproval. Live by other people's claps, and you'll build a life that chases microphones. Live by your own standards, and you'll build a life that keeps working in the dark. Start with a brutal audit. Where does your self-respect currently come from? Be specific. From metrics. From that one person's approval. From public streaks. From looking busy. From being the strong one. Then ask the corrective question. Which of these can I control daily, regardless of mood or audience? The stoic move is to ground your worth in inputs you can repeat. Behavior that aligns with your values, rather than outcomes that depend on the weather. Validation becomes a byproduct of integrity, not a substitute for it. Build an internal scoreboard, not a fantasy vision board, real receipts. Create 3 daily promises so small they're almost insulting and tie them to your identity. I train for 15 minutes. I build for 30. I practice presence for 10, phone in another room. Each night, check one box for each. When you keep them, say it out loud. I keep my word to myself. That sentence matters, because the opposite has been true for years, and your nervous system believes old data. You are updating the file with evidence. Pair the scoreboard with a weekly evidence review. Once a week, write a 1-page memo to yourself with 3 sections. Kept promises. Difficult things done. Quiet wins. Keep promises. List the tiny commitments you honored. Difficult things done. 1 boundary held. 1 fear rep acted on. 1 task shipped while uninspired. Quiet wins. Progress that no one clapped for. Clearer writing. Deeper sleep. Calmer response. This isn't journaling for poetics. It's forensic accounting for self-trust. Over time, you'll feel a shift. Pride becomes quieter and heavier, less about performance, more about proof. Run an approval fast. For 7 days, remove the quick-hit sources of worth that make you chase reflections instead of substance. No posting to fish for reassurance. No sending drafts. Just for thoughts, before you've given it your best pass. No asking 3 people if your boundary was okay. You're not banning feedback, you're sequencing it. You will first approve the attempt, then solicit targeted input. During the fast, when the itch to seek permission spikes, perform a substitution. 2 minutes of breath, one small upgrade to the work, one sentence of self-approval. This is me, practicing. Then move on. You're rewiring the loop. Effort, self-approval, iteration, optional external feedback, not effort, external approval, permission to continue. Define your standard operating self, SOS. Write one paragraph that describes how you move when you're at your best. Clear, kind, consistent, courageous. Include verbs, not fluff. I say the necessary hard thing once, calmly. I protect one sacred work block. I train, even when flat. I choose precise asks instead of vague venting. Post it where you work. Now the question each day is not, do they like me, but am I moving like my SOS? If yes, you earn validation. If no, you adjust. The standard is internal, behavior-based, and always within reach. Calibrate your relationship with praise and criticism. Both are data. Neither is destiny. When praise comes, accept it without enlarging it. Thank you. Then translate it into process language. What behavior produced this result? Keep doing that, not the performance that was noticed. When criticism arrives, run it through the same four-step filter you're building for projections. Source, signal, self-check, step. If the source is credible and the note is actionable, implement one change and log the upgrade. If it's vague or from the cheap seats, thank it internally for the workout and return to your lever. Either way, validation remains yours because you decide how external voices convert into practice. Rehearse solitude without spectacle. One hidden reason we chase validation is that being unseen feels like erasure. Solve that by giving yourself private ceremonies of acknowledgement. At the end of a work block, stand, breathe, and say, quietly, good, done. When you finish a workout, place a mark on a wall calendar. When you hold a boundary, write a two-line debrief. What I said, how I stayed calm. You're teaching your brain that your notice is enough. This reduces the compulsion to announce every effort in search of fuel. Install a no-performance window, 24 to 72 hours after starting a new habit or project. You will not share it publicly. You will earn your own belief before collecting other people's comments. Why? Because early-stage validation is often sugar. It spikes motivation without adding muscle. The pump fades and you're left hungrier. Muscle comes from reps. Share later when feedback can refine, not replace your drive. Clean up the inner voice that has been outsourcing your worth. Many of us internalized a commentator who sounds like the internet, snarky, binary, theatrical. Fire them. Hire a head coach. The coach asks two questions at day's end. Where did you honor your standard? And what is the smallest tweak for tomorrow? That's it. No character assassinations, no existential verdicts, just process. You'll find you work longer and better under this tone, because your nervous system doesn't waste energy defending itself from its own owner. Create a short bill of self-respect, 5 lines you will live by regardless of crowd reaction. I do not negotiate my standards for belonging. I do not explain my boundaries in paragraphs. I measure days by inputs I control. I can be proud in silence. I correct with action more than apology. Read it each morning. It's not magic, it's marching orders. Expect withdrawal. Validation abstinence will make you itchy. The urge to check, to ask, to post, strong. Treat it like caffeine jitters on day one without coffee. You don't moralize. You breathe and keep moving. After a week, you'll notice something startling. Focus returns. The work gets deeper. The highs are steadier because they're tethered to effort, not applause. And when external validation does arrive, it lands on solid ground. You'll appreciate it without becoming dependent on it. Dependency makes you timid. Appreciation makes you generous. An advanced move: build a tiny inner council, three names you respect, alive or dead, whose standards you voluntarily submit to. When you finish a piece of work, ask, would they sign their initials to this attempt? If yes, you approve. If not, you upgrade one concrete element and try again. This prevents the pendulum from swinging into narcissism, only my opinion matters, while keeping you out of the crowd's court. Finally, tie validation to virtue. The most durable pride doesn't come from being impressive. It comes from being aligned. Did you tell the truth? Did you keep your word? Did you move despite fear? Did you give more than you promised? That's the ledger you sleep on. The day the room forgets you, and the room will, you'll still be able to look in the mirror without negotiating. That look is the purest validation on earth. Not, I am the best, but I am becoming someone I can rely on. If you want a line to carry into the week, take this. I approve effort aligned with my standards. Speak it after small reps, not just big wins. The sound you're training yourself to crave is not applause. It's the quiet click of a promise kept. That click is how you get ahead when no one is there for you, because you were. 5. Rise. Quickly, turn failure into fire. Failure isn't a verdict, it's raw material, but most of us treat it like a permanent tattoo, loud, public, shame-colored. We freeze, we hide, we narrate the fall so many times it becomes identity. The difference between people who move ahead alone and people who stall isn't talent, it's turnaround time. How fast do you convert a string into a step? How quickly do you translate embarrassment into information and information into improvement? The game isn't never fall, it's shorten the floor time. When no one is there to clap you up, you must become the kind of person who self-rescues, calmly, repeatedly, without theatrics. Start with a reframing that will save you years. Failure is feedback delivered in a tone you don't like. Strip the tone, take the data. That pitch was ignored, your message didn't land, or your list was off. That date ghosted? Your vibe, timing or standards need adjustment. That launch fizzled? Your offer was unclear, mispositioned or under-tested. Painful, sure. But pain is not instruction's enemy. It's how the lesson gets your attention. Your job is to move from narrative to numbers. Narratives sound like, I'm not cut out for this. Numbers sound like, my response rate is 2%. I'll test 3 new subject lines today. Numbers win. Build a failure-to-fire protocol. 5 steps you run automatically the moment you hit the ground. Step 1. Contain the splash. After a miss, your mind floods with global conclusions. Don't feed it. Use a 24-hour containment rule. No life decisions. No dramatic announcements. No, I guess I'm done. No mass texts asking for diagnosis. You can feel, but you won't legislate. Breathe, walk, hydrate, sleep. Let the adrenaline wash out so you can evaluate with eyes that aren't shaking. Step 2. Extract the exacts. Write a 1-page debrief with 3 headings. What I intended, what happened, what's the gap. Be offensively specific. I intended to book 5 calls. I booked 1. I sent 50 emails with 1 template at 10 a.m. to a cold list. Open rate 14%. Replies 2%. Specifics produce levers. Vague pain produces drama. Include 1 question. What did I control that I underused? That line hurts. It also hands you power. Step 3. Isolate the skill. Every failure is a missing skill in disguise. Name it: copywriting, framing, timing, boundaries, recovery pace. If you can't name the skill, you can't train it. Choose one micro skill to improve in the next 7 days. Write clearer CTAs. Ask for the meeting once directly. Practice closing statements. Set expectations up front. Training shrinks shame because shame hates process. It only thrives in fog. Step 4. Design a tiny rematch. Within 48 hours, schedule a repeat attempt that is small enough to do and different enough to learn from. If the call went poorly, book another with a tweaked opener. If your essay flopped, publish a shorter one with a single point. If your boundary wobbled, practice the sentence in a low-stakes situation. This is exposure therapy for your ambition. The goal isn't revenge, it's reconnection. Reconnecting action to identity so you don't start believing the story that you only move when conditions are perfect. Step 5. Bank the burn. Use the emotional heat to fuel a cycle, not a spiral. Anger and embarrassment are energy. If you don't aim them, they ferment into self-loathing. Aim them into reps. For the next 7 mornings, I do the skill drill before anything else. You are not punishing yourself. You are farming the spark while it's hot. After 7 days, the burn cools and discipline takes over. That handoff is maturity. Upgrade your relationship with embarrassment. Most people avoid the very actions that would grow them because they can't tolerate looking rough in public. But looking rough is how competence is minted. Adopt a simple creed. Visible attempts beat invisible fantasies. Tell yourself, I do not protect my image at the expense of my future. Then make attempts so frequent that a single flop can't dominate the narrative. When you ship weekly, one bad piece is a lesson. When you ship yearly, one bad piece is a prophecy. Increase volume to dilute shame. There's a psychology hack here. Separate the self from the system. You didn't fail. Your current system produced its natural output. That is both humbling and liberating. Systems generate results. Change the inputs, sequence, or environment, and your luck changes. Instead of, I'm terrible at outreach, try, my outreach system is low converting. I will A/B test 2 subject lines and add 1 warm intro daily. Instead of, I can't hold boundaries, try, my boundary system is verbal only. I'll add a written follow-up and a consequence I'll actually apply. Systems language keeps you out of existential despair and inside the workshop where real work happens. Practice fast emotional transmutation. When the sting hits, name the feeling without poetry. Shame wave, anger spark, fear buzz. Count backward from 5 as you stand up. Change physical state within those 5 seconds. Cold water on wrists. Walk to the door. 3 slow physiological sighs. 2 short inhales through the nose. Long exhale through the mouth. Then do 1 competence act immediately. Send the next message. Fix a line of the proposal. Tighten the headline. Set the next meeting. You're teaching your body that action follows pain, not paralysis. Over time, the gap between hurt and motion shrinks. That shrinking is your edge. Normalize loss with a failure ledger you actually want to read. 1 row per attempt. Date, experiment, result, learning, next test. Keep it plain. Review weekly. Celebrate not the miss, but the iteration. A ledger like this immunizes you against the myth of the straight line. You start to see patterns, what time you work best, which opens get responses, where you consistently underprepare. The ledger doesn't care about your mood. That indifference is mercy. Watch your language around failure. Ban absolute identity-stamped phrases. No, always, never, I'm just not the type. Replace with tense and training. This version of my process failed. I'm upgrading. I'm learning to close. I'm practicing clarity under pressure. Tiny edits interrupt learned helplessness. You are not annotating your doom. You are narrating your training. Protect your environment post-fall. The hour after a failure is when low-quality inputs are most dangerous. Don't go scrolling for evidence you're doomed. Don't send mass, does this suck, messages. Curate, one mentor, one peer, one page in your notebook. Ask for a specific note, not validation. What's one change that would have increased clarity? Where did I lose you? Specific questions invite useful answers. Vague pleas invite projections that will make you smaller. Carry a personal law. Never let a bad day take two. If the miss ruined Tuesday, your only job is to win a small, boring Wednesday. No heroics, just the next right block of work, the next boundary kept, the next clean meal, the next early night. Two in a row is how slumps start. One and stop is how careers endure. Finally, restore warmth toward yourself. Not as a treat, but as maintenance. The person who learns fastest is not the one who screams at themselves. It's the one who can look squarely at a miss without adding cruelty. Replace, I blew it, with I met my edge. Replace, everyone saw me fail, with I had the courage to try where most perform certainty. That warmth isn't delusion, it's fuel efficiency. Shame burns hot and brief. Respect burns steady and long. So the next time you fall, and you will, remember, speed matters. Contain, extract, isolate, rematch, bank, move numbers, not narratives. Use the heat, then move back to rhythm. The world won't rush to lift you. Good. You don't need it to. You are becoming the person who stands up faster than they went down and keeps walking with a clearer eye, a stronger system, and a life that no longer fears the floor. 6. Act without relying on inspiration, will over emotion. Inspiration is a beautiful liar. It arrives loud, generous, full of promise, and leaves without paying the bill. If your life moves only when you feel like it, you've handed your future to weather. Weather is gorgeous. It's also unreliable. Stoicism replaces weather with will. Not a clenched jaw or a performative grind, but a quiet, repeatable agreement. I act because the action is right, not because the mood is perfect. You already do this in miniature. You don't wait to feel inspired to brush your teeth. The work that matters deserves the same ordinariness. The first step is to demote emotion from driver to passenger. Emotions are data, they are not directives. You can register fatigue, boredom, resistance, and still move. Think of mood as a gauge on your dashboard, useful to glance at, dangerous to obey, unquestioned. If the gauge reads low, you don't abandon the road. You adjust the drive. Lighter gear, smaller hill, shorter loop. But you keep steering. This is not denial. It's leadership. Most people confuse motivation with readiness. Motivation is the feeling. Readiness is the system. Build readiness and you'll move on flat days. A system is a choreography of cues, environment, and minimum viable actions that make beginning easier than bargaining. If your workout requires a commute, a perfectly curated playlist, and 3 text confirmations, your system serves drama, not discipline. Shrink the activation energy. Put the shoes by the bed. Set the mat out the night before. Choose one movement you'll do even at 20% battery, 10 minutes of kettlebell swings, a brisk loop around the block, a bodyweight circuit. The hard part isn't the session, it's the start. Design for the start. Decide your floor, not ceiling, for each domain you care about. floor is the non-negotiable minimum that keeps the groove alive on bad days. Ceiling is the high expression version when you're lit. Writers with flaws write two ugly paragraphs. Lifters with flaws execute a 20-minute maintenance lift. Builders with flaws ship one micro feature or send three outreach notes. The floor protects identity. It tells your nervous system, we still are this, even when the sky is grey. Ceilings come and go. Floors keep you. Make an oath with time rather than with output. Output is seductively slippery. You can always argue you need more research, more edits, more energy. Time is honest. For the next 45 minutes, I will be with the task. Phones away, tabs closed, body seated, eyes on the work. If you produce two lines, fine. If you produce 20 pages, fine. Either way, you honored the block. Show up for enough blocks and output stacks regardless of how inspired you felt inside any single one. Ritual beats hype. A small repeatable sequence at the same time of day turns action into reflex. Sit, fill a glass, breathe five slow rounds, open the doc, type three throwaway sentences, or tie the act to an existing anchor. After coffee, I write. After lunch, I walk. After shutting the laptop, I prepare tomorrow's top three. You aren't summoning lightning, you're laying rails. Willpower loves rails. The fewer choices between you and the first move, the cheaper the move becomes. Cheap moves compound. When resistance argues, keep the conversation short. It will say, not today. Tomorrow we'll crush it. You answer, 10 minutes now. It will say, this is pointless if we can't do it perfectly. You answer, floor today. Ceiling later. It will say, you're not in the mood. You answer, mood can join after we begin. This call and response is not childish. It's how you reparent the part of you that confuses comfort with safety. You aren't scolding, you're shepherding. Use implementation intentions stated in if-then language. If I feel the urge to scroll during my block, then I put the phone in the other room and stand for one breath. If the first sentence feels impossible, then I type exactly what I would text a friend about this idea. If the gym is closed, then I do a bodyweight ladder at home. These pre-decisions rescue you from decision fatigue. Action loves foregone conclusions. Detach dignity from drama. You've been trained by highlight reels to believe that great work is always accompanied by great feeling. Often the opposite is true. The best sessions feel quiet, even dull. You don't enter the zone, you mow the lawn. The lawn looks better, you move on. The more you normalize ordinary sessions, the less hostage you become to rare ones. And then a strange mercy appears. Because you act without demanding fireworks, fireworks visit more often. Consistency invites momentum. Momentum invites magic. But you never wait for magic to start. Treat attention as a muscle you train, not a mood you chase. Start with small, clean sets. 15 minutes of deep focus, 5 minutes off, repeat 3 times. Or one block of 25 on, 5 off. Yes, the old tomato timer works when you use it honestly. During the on block, practice returning. You will leave. Your mind will chase noises, hunger, fantasies. The rep is the return, not the purity of staying. Each return is a vote for will over drift. Over weeks, the sets lengthen naturally. You don't brag, you keep stacking. On days when you genuinely cannot find the spark, switch the vector of pride. Don't chase the high of, I crushed it. Chase the steadiness of, I kept the chain. Put an X on the calendar when you honor your floor. Watch rows of X's string together. If you miss a day, you miss. Then place the next X. Never miss twice for the same reason. That single rule prevents slumps disguised as rest. Be ruthless with the first hour of the day. If you hand it to the swarm, messages, headlines, their agendas, you'll spend the rest of the day buying back scraps of focus. Claim the hour. Move your body. Meet your mind. Touch your craft. Even 15 honest minutes before you touch the world changes how the world touches you. You stop needing inspiration because you start your own weather, calm, deliberate, yours. Reframe discipline as a kindness to your future. Many people avoid discipline because they equate it with self-punishment. Discipline is care at scale. It is how you relieve your future self from the chaos your present self is tempted to create. When you act without waiting for inspiration, you aren't being harsh, you're being helpful. You are placing bricks for the person you want to meet 3 months from now. That person will thank you. In currencies, inspiration never pays. Quiet confidence, predictable progress, a life that doesn't collapse when the mood dips. Guard recovery like you guard work. Acting without inspiration doesn't mean burning without refuel. Sleep before midnight more often than not. Eat like you respect your machine. Step outside daily and let distance widen your view. Laughter counts, friendship counts, stillness counts. Recovery isn't a reward for good behavior. It's part of the behavior that makes will sustainable. The well-rested don't need as much inspiration because their baseline isn't chaos. And if you need one sentence to carry into the week, take this. I begin, then I become. Not, I become, then I begin. Begin in small, almost embarrassing ways. One paragraph, one call, one set, one block. Let identity trail action. It will. You'll wake one morning and realize you no longer ask whether you feel like it. You check your plan, touch your floor, and sometimes, when the weather is kind, you fly. Either way, you move. If you're ready, we'll keep going. 7. You don't need anyone to understand you. Everything you seek is within. You've been waiting for someone to finally get you, the mentor who translates your chaos into a plan, the friend who reads your silences, the partner who sees the fire under your restraint and says, "I know exactly what you're trying to build." When no one does, disappointment curdles into doubt. Maybe I'm wrong about myself. Maybe I'm asking for too much. Maybe I should shrink until I fit the room. That's the wrong lesson. The world's misunderstanding is not a verdict. It's a mirror asking, will you own your path before anyone else can narrate it? Here's the hard, liberating truth. Being understood is beautiful. Being grounded is better. Understanding is a bonus. Grounding is a duty. The Stoic move is to migrate your center of gravity from other people's comprehension to your own conviction. The day you stop waiting to be seen before you act is the day momentum begins. You become the witness you've been searching for, present, honest, steady. From that witness, you move. Start by separating recognition from reality. Recognition is public. Reality is private. Recognition says, we approve. Reality says, I did the work. You cannot control recognition, not timing, tone, or volume. You can control reality, inputs, standards, cadence. When you anchor to reality, loneliness loses leverage. People can misread you and you still sleep because your ledger answers louder. I kept my word to my craft today. I trained. I told the truth. I built. Your nervous system learns to trust receipts over reception. Then retrain your relationship with explanation. You've been over-explaining to buy belonging. It's exhausting. Paragraphs to justify a boundary. Essays to rationalize a pivot. Speeches to preempt someone's fear. Explanation masquerades as connection It's often self-abandonment. Replace it with clarity and consequence. Say less, mean more. I'm doing this. I'm not available for that. Here's the timeline. Clean lines invite respect. People who need a novel to respect a sentence aren't your counsel. They're your audience. You owe your counsel updates. You owe your audience results. To live without being universally understood, you need an inner court, a place where your work and your why are examined by standards that don't wobble. Build it. Three parts. A written charter, a daily review, a weekly council. The charter is one page you can read in under a minute. It states your direction in verbs, not vibes. I write to make complex things usable. I train because a strong body steadies my mind. I build for autonomy and service. Add constraints that protect you from drift. No public decisions in private storms. No new projects until the last one ships. No defending my boundary more than once. The charter is a compass, not a cage. When confusion arrives, and it will, you don't beg for clarity from the crowd. You read your page. The daily review is a 5-minute check at day's end. What did I do that aligned with the charter? Where did I wobble? What is the smallest correction for tomorrow? Keep it mechanical. You're not narrating your worth. You're adjusting your course. Repetition breeds trust. Trust breeds quiet. Quiet breeds power. The weekly council is your selective circle. Two or three voices who have earned the right to shape your process. They may be alive or not. Mentors you know, or thinkers you study. The rule, they must have built or become something in the direction you're headed. Ask them for specific input, not permission. Tighter thesis? Cleaner offer? Where did my boundary blur? Filter everything else. You're not antisocial, you're pro-signal. Now make peace with misinterpretation. When you stop performing comprehension theater, when you no longer contort yourself to be palatable, people will invent reasons for your choices. Cold, arrogant, obsessed, breathe. Their story is a Rorschach. It tells you about their ink, not your shape. Your job is to reduce real harm, not imagined offense. If you've been clear and kind, you proceed. If not, repair quickly and continue. Either way, you do not mortgage your direction to purchase someone's temporary comfort. To strengthen the muscle of inner approval, practice silent milestones. Shipwork without announcement. Hit a PR in a quiet gym and smile at no one. Send the difficult email and close the laptop with a hand on your heart. Good. Done. These private ceremonies teach your brain that your notice is enough. You stop building effort around applause access. Paradoxically, this makes the applause that eventually arrives cleaner because it lands on a self that isn't starving. When the ache for understanding spikes, and it will, soothe it with specificity, not spirals. What do you want them to understand exactly? Your pace, your standards, your why. Good. Now embody those in your next block of work. If it's pace, keep the cadence. If it's standards, upgrade one detail. If it's why, write one paragraph of mission and tape it where you choose. Let action explain what explanations cannot. The people capable of understanding will recognize the signal. The rest weren't meant to steer you. Guard your energy from the empathy trap. You can spend a lifetime hosting other people's confusion about your path. Endless coffees where you defend choices they don't have to live with. Compassion doesn't require consent forms. It requires boundaries. Offer kindness. Refuse custody. I hear your concern. I'm continuing. That sentence can save a year. There's a deeper layer. Your need to be understood likely carries an old wound. Times you were unseen, unheard, dismissed. Honor it. Then give yourself now what you were denied then. Consistent presence. Sit with your own life for 15 undistracted minutes daily. Write the sentence you wish someone would say to you, and say it to yourself truthfully. I see the discipline it takes to keep going. I see the fear you carry, and the courage that carries it. I see how much you care about doing this right. Self-witnessing isn't indulgence, it's maintenance. It prevents you from demanding that the world mother you before you move. Transform isolation into instruction. If almost no one around you gets it, treat it as a training ground for clarity. Your work must communicate to strangers anyway. Can you express your value in one paragraph a 10-year-old could grasp? Can you show results that silence debate? Can you package your offers so cleanly that comprehension becomes default? The burden of clarity is yours. The burden of agreement is not. Adopt two mantras. First, I answer to the charter. When envy, confusion, or pressure visit, you touch the page and return to your levers. Second, less defense, more demonstration. You don't argue identity, you demonstrate it. Through daily blocks, shipped artifacts, steady standards, and calm boundaries. Demonstration wins the only vote that matters, the one you cast for yourself. Expect a lag between building and being believed. That lag is not failure, it's gestation. Seeds don't explain themselves to the soil. They go dark and turn pressure into growth. You are allowed to do the same. When the bloom comes, some will say they always knew. Smile. You'll know who walked with you when the map was inked in private. Thank them. Keep moving. Here's your practice for the next week. Write your one-page charter. Keep a 5-minute nightly review. Choose one silent milestone. Decline one unnecessary explanation. If you need a sentence to carry when the room doesn't understand, let it be this. Clarity within, cadence without. You know what you're doing. You keep doing it. Understanding will catch up, or it won't. Either way, you won't be waiting at the door with your life on hold. You'll be inside, building. 8. No one is coming. That's where true strength is born. There's a myth that keeps you small. The cavalry is on its way. A mentor will discover you. A partner will stabilize you. A lucky break will finally validate you. Meanwhile, months pass. Your inbox stays quiet. Your motivation decays in the waiting room of some day. Stoic truth is harsher and kinder. No one is coming. And that sentence, properly understood, isn't despair. It's liberation. When you stop outsourcing the beginning to other people's arrival, your life begins now. Not after the reply, not after the invite, now. The absence of rescue is the birthplace of real strength, because it forces you to choose agency over fantasy. Most of us learned dependence disguised as hope. We were fed stories where help appears at the last second. The coach who notices the bench warmer, the investor who reads the cold email, the soulmate who heals the ache you refuse to meet yourself. Stories aren't evil, they're entertainment. But if you live by them, you'll build your days around waiting instead of working. No one is coming doesn't mean people don't care. It means the people who care can't do your push-ups. They can point, cheer, fund, collaborate, but they can't carry the responsibility you keep trying to delegate. Decide, begin, persist. So replace the myth with a vow. I am my first responder. When something breaks, plans, routines, expectations, you don't write a monologue, you run a protocol. When energy dips, you don't petition the universe for a sign. You touch your floor. When a door closes, you don't tweet the injustice, you knock on 5 more. The person you're becoming is reliable to themselves. Reliability is the quietest flex. It makes you heavy in your own hands. People feel it, opportunities orbit it, but it is built without witnesses. Here's a framework to operationalize this posture. S-O-L-O. Scan, own, levers, operate. Scan. Name reality without theater. Revenue is down 30%. I haven't trained in 2 weeks. I'm lonely at 9 p.m. No adjectives, no indictments, just the dashboard. Drama hides levers. Clarity reveals them. Own. Divide the scene into controllables and weather. Mine. Outreach cadence. Offer clarity. Spending discipline. Not mine. Macro conditions. Other people's pace. Ownership is not blame. It's the beginning of power. You take custody of what moves when you move. Levers. Design 2 micro actions you can deploy today and 2 systems you'll build this month. Today, send 10 targeted emails, 20 minutes of bodyweight work, 1 hour of skill practice. This month, weekly review cadence, a simple CRM, a sleep window I protect, a no-performance morning block. Micro actions change state, systems change trajectory. Operate, execute in blocks, not bursts. A block is 45 to 90 minutes marked on a calendar, phone away, outcome defined by presence, not miracles. When the urge to announce progress spikes, you stay silent and finish the block. Operate daily until you stop needing inspiration to keep the chain. Pair SOLO with a no permission list. 10 moves you will make without asking first. Start a newsletter. Raise your price by 10% for new clients. Publish the article. Schedule the consultation. Apply to 5 roles. Propose the collaboration. Book the venue. Host the room for 6 people, even if 2 show. Launch a tiny product. Post your offer with a Stripe link. You don't wait for social proof. You produce proof of life. Expect the psyche to protest. But what if I choose wrong? You will. Choosing wrong while moving is cheaper than choosing nothing while waiting. Movement returns data. Waiting returns doubt. The Roman way was simple. Act, review, adjust. Your confidence problem is not a lack of belief. It's a lack of receipts. Receipts are created by motion, especially when no one is watching. You'll also feel the gravity of old bargains. I do my best work under pressure. I need accountability. Translate them. Pressure equals procrastination tax. Accountability equals borrowed discipline. Useful, sometimes. Lethal as a lifestyle. You are building internal accountability by making promises so small you can keep them unassisted and so consistent they become identity. 3 promises daily. Body, move, craft, build, order. Tidy 1 neglected square foot of your life, desk, inbox, finances. Check them at night. Say it. I kept my word to myself. That sentence will rebuild a spine that waiting sanded down. There's a social detox required here. Some relationships thrive when you stop waiting. They admire your momentum and match it. Others wither because your new posture exposes the deal. They offered comfort in exchange for your stagnation. You can love people without joining their inertia. When no one is coming becomes your ethic, you stop recruiting co-signers for obvious moves. You also stop auditioning for understanding. You inform with kindness and proceed. Fewer debates, more delivery. Practice self-advocacy without drama. Ask for what advances the mission, information, access, feedback, once, cleanly, and move whether the answer is yes or no. Can we pilot this for 2 weeks? Is there budget for X? If not, I'll route around and report back. This tone unnerves systems that feed on begging. You aren't rude, you're responsible. You make the ask, then you make the move. Most doors open not because you pleaded, but because you arrived with momentum and a track record of shipping without supervision. Guard your mornings like a sovereign. The first hour decides whether you'll be a citizen of your day or a refugee from it. No one is coming to rescue your focus at 7 a.m. You own it or you donate it. Move your body. Touch the craft. Review your three levers. If you do nothing else, you've already advanced the version of you that doesn't need permission. By noon, the day can throw its weather. You've already sailed. When fatigue bites, and it will, recover on purpose. Self-rescue is not a synonym for self-abuse. Sleep earlier. Eat to stabilize, not to spike. Walk until your mind widens. Touch a friend who fuels, not a feed that drains. True strength isn't endless push. It's intelligent cycles. Stress, recover, repeat. You're building durability, not drama. Adopt two mantras. First, begin before you're believed. You don't need buy-in to be in motion. Second, results over rescue. Every time you catch yourself drafting a plea or performing despair, convert the energy into a lever in the next 10 minutes. You'll be amazed how many unsolvable problems soften when met with quiet, repeated action instead of eloquent waiting. One last practice. The 48-hour rule. Any idea that would meaningfully improve your life must see a visible step within 2 days. An email sent, a date booked, a prototype shared, a deposit placed, a calendar block created. If 48 hours pass with no artifact in the world, the idea slides to a parking lot you review weekly. This rule prevents your hopes from becoming museum pieces. It keeps you honest. We move, or we admit we're not ready yet. Both are fine. Pretending is not. No one is coming, and that is the best news you'll hear this year. Because it means the wait is over. It means the hour is yours. It means you can become the person people come to later, not for rescue, but for example, the person who went first, quietly, repeatedly, until momentum made the room look up. Start today. Scan, own, pull the lever, operate the block. When doubt knocks, answer with evidence. I'm already on my way. 9. Meet yourself in silence before you meet the world. Most days you wake up and the world arrives before you do. Messages, headlines, obligations, elbowing their way into your nervous system, telling you who you are and what should matter. By 9 a.m., your attention is already rented out. No wonder you feel like a guest in your own life. Stoicism offers a counter-ritual so simple, it's almost impolite to modern chaos. Meet yourself first. Before you answer anyone, answer to yourself. Not as a luxury, but as governance. Silence is not the absence of life. It's the chamber where you take the oath to live on purpose. Silence has a job description. It is where you calibrate your compass, refuel your will, and choose your first lever. Without it, you move on borrowed momentum, other people's urgencies, algorithms, suggestions, yesterday's moods. With it, you set the order of the day from the inside out. This is not mysticism, it's mechanics. Your brain wakes in a plastic state, suggestible, ready to imprint. If the first imprint is noise, you spend the day in reaction. If the first imprint is your own voice, you spend the day in response. Reaction is expensive. Response is efficient. Begin by lowering the bar so silence can actually happen. You don't need a monastery. You need 10 uninterrupted minutes. Put the phone in another room. Out of sight is out of temptation. Sit somewhere plain. Close your eyes if it helps. Breathe in for 4, out for 6, until your shoulders agree you're not being chased. This isn't meditation performance. It's contact. Your only task is to arrive. Mind in body, body in chair, chair in room. From arrival, you can ask useful questions. Without a rival, you're just rehearsing stress with your eyes closed. Run a simple three-part check you can do in the time it takes coffee to cool. State, standards, step, state, name what's here without a verdict. Tired, tight, curious, flat. Standards. Read a short page that defines how you move at your best. Clear, kind, consistent, courageous. Step. Choose one lever for body, one for craft, one for order. Body might be 20 minutes brisk walk. Craft might be 30 minutes on the hard paragraph. Order might be 10-minute tidy of finances or inbox. Write them down. That little list is a contract. The world will submit competing bids. Your job is to honor the contract before you negotiate with chaos. Silence also clarifies boundaries before they become battles. In quiet, ask, what will I not do today? I will not check messages before my first block. I will not argue tone over text. I will not add a new task until I ship one. Prohibitions sound harsh. They're merciful. They prevent preventable fires. Think of them as preemptive exits you build while calm, so the anxious version of you doesn't have to invent strategy with a shaking hand. Give your silence a physical anchor. Light a single candle. Place a stone on your desk. Face the same window. These aren't superstitions. They're somatic switches. The body loves cues. Over time, one sight, one scent, one object become shorthand for we are home, we are in charge. When the day goes feral, a glance at that anchor is a micro return. Oh yes, this is who I am and how I move. Write one paragraph each morning that begins, today will try to make me forget. Then finish the sentence honestly. That rest is part of the plan. That kindness and firmness can share a sentence. That I don't need to defend what I can demonstrate. Close with, I will remember by, and name the behavior, a walk at noon, one clean boundary, shipping the draft. You're not predicting doom, you're predicting friction. Friction is how wheels grip. Expect it, and you stop dramatizing it. Use silence to resolve micro-resentments before they metastasize. Scan your interior. Who are you quietly angry at? What tiny betrayal of your standards are you trying not to see? Don't write a manifesto, write a move. If you owe an apology, draft a single line and send it after your first block. If you need a distance, set it cleanly. If the resentment is toward yourself, convert it into one correction you will execute today. Silence isn't a courtroom, it's a workshop. Verdicts are useless without repairs. Guard against the counterfeit. Lonely scrolling in a dark room is not silence, it's sedation. The proof is what follows. Real silence returns you to action with less noise in your head and more weight in your stance. Sedation spits you back into the day, glazed and guilty. The distinction matters because you're training a feeling state you'll associate with being alone. If solitude equals sedation, you'll fear it. If solitude equals sovereignty, you'll seek it. Midday, take a 2-minute recalibration. Step outside if possible. Put your attention on 3 distant sounds, then 3 close sounds. This pulls your awareness wide, then near. Ask, what's real? What matters? What's next? Real cuts drama. Matters restores proportion. Next moves your feet. You can do this at a sink, in a stairwell, between meetings. The day's static decreases not by shouting back, but by practicing returns. Attention is a boomerang you must throw on purpose. Evenings deserve a closing silence too. Not hours, just enough to drain the day's residue. No autopsies. 3 lines is plenty. What did I keep? What did I learn? What will I improve tomorrow? Then stop. Put the day down like a weight you won't carry to bed. Sleep is strategy. Tomorrow's silence starts tonight, because a rested brain can meet itself. A fried one can only flee. But my life is loud. Kids, calls, crises. All the more reason to carve thin, inviolable slices. 10 minutes is not a monastery. It is 10 minutes. The resistance you feel is not logistical. It's existential. Silence removes excuses and reveals authorship. When you meet yourself first, you can no longer blame the world for your entire stance. That accountability stings. It also frees. The person who governs their first 10 minutes tends to govern more of their 10 hours. Practical scaffolding for the next 7 days. Set an alarm with a label. Meet yourself first. Place the phone across the room so your body must stand. Sit, breathe, run, state standards, step. Choose one lever for body, craft, order. Write the "today will try to make me forget" line. Touch your anchor. Begin your first block before you open the gates. Midday, perform the 2-minute recalibration. Night, write the 3-line close. That's it. No poetry required, just repetition. You will not become invulnerable. You will become available to your own life. The room will still be loud, but you won't be an instrument that plays every note it demands. You'll pick your melody early and return to it often. And when no one is there for you, and some days no one will be, you'll still have met the one person who can carry you through the hours, the self you greeted in the quiet before the world had its say. 10. Discipline in the dark seasons builds unshakable character. Everyone loves the montage. Summer light, quick results, friends cheering from the sidelines. But life is mostly not a montage. Life is winter. Quiet stretches where nothing seems to move. Messages go unanswered. Your energy feels average at best, and the mirror gives you more questions than confidence. These are the dark seasons. After the breakup, after the layoff, after the market turns, after the first burst of novelty dies, and your project is suddenly just work. Most people treat dark seasons as holding patterns, time to wait, complain, or rearrange the furniture of excuses. Stoicism treats them as the gym where character gets built heavy. What you do when no one sees you decides what people will one day admire when everyone does. First, name the season without dramatizing it. This is a building winter. Language matters. If you call it failure, your nervous system looks for exits. If you call it training, it looks for weights. The difference is not poetry, it's posture. You're not stuck, you're strengthening, and strengthening has rules. Rule 1, replace mood with method. In dark seasons, the emotional weather is fog and drizzle. If you wait for sunshine to train, you'll lose months. Build a method that begins without asking how you feel. The spine is 3 blocks a day. Body, craft, order. Body. Move for 20 to 40 minutes, enough to sweat gently, and remind your brain you're someone who acts. Craft. 90 minutes on the one thing that moves the mission. Write, code, design, sell, study, phone away, timer on. Order. Restore 1 square foot of life. Finances, inbox, room, gear. These 3 blocks are not glamorous. They are ballast. When the boat rocks, ballast keeps you upright. Rule 2. Lower the ceiling, harden the floor. Your best days may be temporarily out of reach. That's fine. Shrink the ambition of your great and make your minimum non-negotiable. The floor is what you hit even on days that taste like cardboard. 2 ugly paragraphs, 1 client touchpoint, a walk in the cold, dishes cleared before bed. The floor protects identity. I am still the person who shows up. The ceiling belongs to spring. The floor belongs to you every day of the year. Rule 3. Measure what compounds. Dark seasons love to push you into vanity metrics, likes, views, external milestones that dry up precisely when you're learning the most. Refuse to be graded by weather. Track inputs that mature quietly. Hours in deep work, pages drafted, reps completed, outreach attempts, sleep before midnight, days without breaking your morning vow. Build a wall of X's on a calendar for the inputs you respect. When doubt knocks, show it the wall. Confidence is not a mantra, it's evidence. Rule 4. Design a recovery loop. Grit without restoration is just a slow form of self-harm. Write a short fuel list you can actually keep in heavy months. Lights out by 11, whole food in the house, one outdoor walk, even if it's raining, one conversation a week with someone who doesn't make you audition for care. Protect these like you protect work blocks. A dark season is already taxing your system. Don't withdraw from your last reserves by pretending you're a machine. Rule 5. Pick a hard thing and get quietly good at it. Not for the resume, for the soul. Heavy deadlifts with crisp form. Clean, readable code. Speaking extemporaneously for 5 minutes daily. Drawing from life for 20 minutes. A second language app with 0 day misses. Hard things are teachers that don't flatter you. They introduce you to the edge, then a clearer version of you on the other side. You're not chasing dopamine, you're building density. People feel density before they hear the story. Your presence thickens, your words shorten, your decisions sharpen. That is winter's gift to those who train. Rule 6. Make friends with boring. Boredom isn't the enemy. It's a sign the show in your head is off and the work in your hands is on. The internet taught you to chase novelties per minute. Dark seasons retrain you to mine depth per hour. Set a 45-minute timer and do one thing all the way through. The meal, the page, the sales list, the cleanup, the set. No switching tabs to perform being busy. Boredom will knock for 10 minutes. Past that, momentum takes the chair. Rule 7. Practice public invisibility and private pride. Withdraw from the performative impulse to announce your struggle or narrate your grind. Share selectively with people who can help or hold you, not with crowds that consume you. At the end of each day, conduct a 3-line debrief. Kept. What promise did I keep? Learned. What did today's friction teach? Lever. What's the smallest upgrade for tomorrow? Tiny, honest pride accumulates compound interest. The person who trusts themselves in winter is terrifyingly effective in spring. Rule 8. Convert setbacks into systems. A missed morning isn't proof you're weak. It's a prompt to adjust architecture. Move the phone across the room. Lay clothes on the chair. Write your first sentence the night before. If you keep breaking a boundary, stop arguing with willpower and alter proximity. Block the sight. Change the route. Involve a friend to text at a specific time. Systems turn self-respect from mood to mechanics. Mechanics keep working when moods don't. Rule 9. Guard the inner circle. Lonely seasons make you susceptible to low-grade company. People who loiter in your life, narrate worst-case scenarios, and call it love. You don't need cheers. You need quiet competence nearby. One peer who is building. One elder who has seen winters and knows they end. One friend who can sit in silence without trying to fix you or make you entertaining. Reduce exposure to the rest. Your attention is tender right now. Don't feed it sugar and expect muscle. Rule 10. Install seasonal mantras. Short lines that you can say at 6 a.m. when courage is scarce. Floors over fireworks. I win the hour. Boredom is proof I'm working. I choose structure over spirals. Put one on a sticky note where your eyes land first. Mantras aren't magic, they are rails. Rails carry you over patches where your feet slip. What about hope? Keep it, but store it in behavior, not fantasy. Hope is not a mood you wait for, it's a ratio you build. Promises kept divided by promises made. Keep the ratio honest, and hope rises like a quiet tide. It will lift boats you forgot you owned. You will be tempted to pause your standards until things pick up. That is how winters stretch into years. Dark seasons end because someone inside them decided to move like spring before spring arrived. They trained, shipped, rested, repeated, not because it felt epic, but because it felt correct. Then one day the light changes, emails come back, doors open. Outsiders call it luck. You'll know it was payroll, months of deposits made to a future that finally matured. If you want a single practice for the next 14 days, take this. Every morning, before the world enters, complete your winter three. Move your body, touch your craft, restore one square foot. Then mark an X. When the doubt begins its monologue, point to the X and return to work. This is not penance, it's preparation. The person you're becoming will thank you in currencies summer can't teach. Quiet confidence, durable calm, and the kind of strength that doesn't need to be loud to be unbreakable. If you trace the arc of these 10 practices, you'll notice something quiet and powerful. None of them require permission. You don't need a team to meet yourself before the world. You don't need applause to keep your floor. You don't need perfect timing to convert failure into fire. You don't need universal understanding to honor your charter. You don't need inspiration when you have will, nor rescue when you have levers. This is the spine of getting ahead when no one is there for you. You stop bargaining with circumstances and start cooperating with reality. You replace hope as waiting with hope as structure. You turn loneliness into a studio, pain into training, fear into a compass, and quiet into governance. The transformation is not theatrical, it's incremental and stubborn. One honest breath before you react, one small promise kept when you'd rather postpone, one clean boundary delivered without a paragraph, one skill rep executed while the room is empty, one difficult message sent with a steady tone, 1 hour won before you open the gates. These are not heroic gestures, they're civilized ones, acts of self-respect repeated until identity forms. Identity, not mood, is what carries you through dark seasons and into the light with your integrity intact. Expect resistance from old habits, from people invested in your softness, from the seductive comfort of distraction. Meet it with process. When the mind screams for spectacle, give it sequence, state to standards to step. When shame reaches for a monologue, hand it a ledger. Attempts, lessons, next tests. When fatigue tries to turn a bad day into a bad week, enforce the law. Never miss twice for the same reason. And when the ache for understanding swells, remember, recognition is public, reality is private. Put your hands back on reality. The work, the walk, the call, the page, the practice. You will feel alone at times. That's not proof you're wrong. It's proof you're early. Builders are often early. Early to get up. Early to change. Early to leave rooms that no longer fit. Early to pay the price for a future that hasn't arrived yet. Pay it gladly. The receipts compound. One morning you'll notice that the quiet you once feared has become your ally. That the standards you once faked have become your reflex, that the person you kept asking the world to send has been sitting in your chair for months, showing up, deciding cleanly, moving without theatrics. When support does arrive, and it will find you in motion. Mentors align with momentum. partners respect cadence. Opportunities orbit-proof. You won't need them to start. You'll invite them to scale. That is the difference between a life that begs and a life that builds. Seal this shift with something small and immediate. In the next 15 minutes, choose your floor for tomorrow. Write one sentence of your charter, send one message you've delayed, or set one 45-minute block you will honor before you touch the world. Evidence before emotion, levers before lament, cadence before consensus. If this episode landed, anchor it below with the words, "I am my first responder." Then prove it once today, quietly, completely, without waiting for anyone to arrive.